When you get the Planet Fitness Black Card, you can bring a friend anytime you work out. And now through March 13th, get your first month free when you join. You heard that right. Conquer the stair climber with your partner in climb. Enjoy a post-workout recovery session in the hydro massage. And do it all again with access to any of our 2,700 convenient locations. So, you coming? Get your first month free and all the perks with the PF Black Card for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 13th. See club for details.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air, everyone. It's a new Wednesday, and Alex is barely able to speak today, let alone laugh.
So. I am going to, just quickly begin the episode by warning that I am having a little asthma flare-up at the moment. So I'm a little short of breath. Interesting task ahead now to do an hour podcast, but I'm going to do my best. I'm here for that. Just don't make me laugh. As anyone will know, when they get these flare-ups, laughing is just the trigger into, then I'm going to have to press mute. You might see me walk off. So yeah, I mean, you're not very funny. So I think I stand a good chance at surviving the hour.
Actually, I beg to differ because I just had you in multiple cough attacks before we started recording.
It's going
to
start. It's starting already.
Yeah. So I hope that we get loads of good laughs for my sake, for the listeners' sake, and you'll just have to cough along with it.
Oh, God.
So today we have, we'll start with the bad news and then we'll get into the funny news and all the rants we have for this week. But first, we have something that's a little more serious and a little more reflective of the bizarre state of the world that we live in March 2025.
Yeah. Sure. So I know what you're alluding to. This is, of course, there are a lot of listeners that will have seen all of the developments that have been going on right now between the new US administration led by Trump and everything that really centers around Russia and the war in Ukraine. And there was that terrible encounter in the White House where, I mean, that was just awful and reminded me of something that we would see in a school playground with bullies and whatnot. We're not going to go into what happened. You can go and have a look there. But as is often the case with anything slightly political or geopolitics, aviation is never far from being on page number one. I've spoken to you before, haven't I, about how very few people understand just how intertwined global politics is with aviation and how aviation is used, weaponized, how it's gifted, how it's used for various different purposes and with different intents. The latest development, which I wanted to discuss with you, is that Russia, which is now in active communication with the Trump admin, has proposed reopening direct flights between the US and Russia in what would be a massive shift ever since the war in Ukraine started. And of course, that is that invasion is ongoing. The meeting, or rather the discussion, where has this come from, took place it was the day that we were recording, where a meeting in Istanbul had taken place between the director of the North America Department in Russia's foreign ministry and the US Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, Sonata Kolter, had this meeting in Istanbul where they had ultimately been discussing what a restoration of air travel links would look like between the two countries. Of course, why is there no air travel link at the moment? It is because 2022, on March 2nd, all flights between the US and also many other areas of the world, including Europe, to Russia were sanctioned and banned following Russia's invasion into Ukraine. And since then, they have been shut out of a lot of the global air travel system, with the exception of mostly areas in East, but also South America. So what do you think? Were you surprised when you saw this? Do you think that this is something that by the time we speak next week or the week after, we'll actually be looking at a return to flying to Russia, despite it being a sanction as a result of the war and the war still very much ongoing?
So, first of all, as you alluded to, the important thing here is that Russia very much views the airspace restrictions as something that, quote, is an irritant inherited from the previous American administration. And we've all seen that the new U.S. administration is basically a proxy of Russia now. They're controlled by Putin. He gets what he wants. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see flights resuming shortly. The thing is that no one has spoken about when I've read articles about this. Europe is still very strongly anti-Russia. And what lies right between Russia and the U.S.? Europe. So although the U.S. And Russia can do whatever they want, agree to whatever they want, also you still have Canada blocking the way for Russia. You have all of Europe. So right now, the only flights from Russia to North America are from Moscow, maybe St. Petersburg, but definitely Moscow to Cuba. And those flights have to fly all the way north over Finland, Norway, and then down. It's a several hour long detour to get to Cuba. So if they were to resume flights to the US, they would have to take that shortcut because obviously no European Union countries or European countries in general are going to be reopening their airspace. Canada most certainly will not. So that's the one part. The second thing I find so insane is that Russia at this meeting in Istanbul was saying, oh, we want to work in the interests of our populations. They're the ones we care about. That's why we want to restore this air travel connection. What a load of BS. How many Americans, how many MAGA supporters do you think are going, yeah, let's take that summer Europe trip to Russia? That sounds like a great forget Italy, forget Paris. Let's fly north to Russia instead. This is not in the interest of any U.S. consumers, possibly Russian people who want to travel to the U.S., but it's so wild on so many levels. And the fact that it's conceivable that we could see this is even crazier.
And don't forget, I mean, you know, you were talking about the kind of anti-Russia sentiment that is stronger in Europe, for example. Again, nothing to do with the fact that they are singling out a country for no reason. These sanctions were put into place following the aggressive invasion of Russia into Ukraine, which is not a disputed, you know, this is not up for negotiation. It's not a disputed rumor as to what has happened. That is what happened. That is still ongoing. And this, we see often in times of major conflict, invasions, big political fallouts, that aviation is somehow worked into some kind of sanction. There would be a lot of unwinding that would have to have been that would have to be done if they were to restore air travel links. But of course, you know, with Trump's admin and with the loyalty that he has of everyone around him, we saw that clip. I mean, asking Zelensky if he doesn't have a suit, meanwhile Elon Musk is seemingly able to wear what he wants and say what he wants. That the whole thing was awful, but when I say about a lot of unwinding, it's not simply that airlines, for example, were told that they can no longer fly to Russia. What I think many people maybe, you know, just generally unaware of is that for an airline to fly to a country in the first place, there has to be that state-to-state agreement that dictates, and this is a political agreement, that dictates what level of aviation relationship the two states will have. It will dictate and determine the number of frequencies, the access, the routes, the seasonality, and all of this. So on the 2nd of March in 2022, the Department of Transportation and the FAA issued the order banning all Russian-owned, registered, or operated aircraft from US airspace. And that applied both to commercial airlines, but also to private aircraft operated by Russian entities or individuals. There are so many ways that people have tried to get around this. And the US and other markets like the UK and the European Union have been evolving that level of sanction in order to get around ultimately what the loopholes are, right? It's often the case that you discover the loopholes later, then you crack down on those, then there are other loopholes as a result, and so on and so on. No exemptions have been granted ever since the ban came into place. The US-Russia bilateral air agreement, and that's that political state-to-state agreement I spoke to you about, has been suspended. And basically before the invasion into Ukraine, Russia and the US pretty much had an open skies agreement. I mean, they did have an open skies agreement. And that allowed the airlines to fly pretty freely between both states. So that agreement was revoked. And without that, there is no legal basis in order for airlines to choose. For example, let's say, you know, let's say in a weird world that Trump set up an airline tomorrow, right? I mean, it could be done. Registered, FAA cleared. They're all, free, you know, everything's Starlink. Now in his pocket. Yeah, you know, a complimentary Starlink, which is, you know, something we both enjoy, but that's a separate product that's not to do with the individual. And he wanted to fly. Without that legal basis, without the bilateral, that wouldn't be possible. There are other things as well. The FAA downgraded Russia's aviation safety rating because they said that they are no longer able to comply with the high standards of the US. And Russia has been kicked out of the council in ICAO.
I just jump in here? Because this is the other part of that equation, mm-hmm. that Russia stole hundreds of aircraft from lessors in the West, in Europe and the US. These are not apples they stole. Each plane is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. They stole 777s, A350s, A330s. And since then, in 2022, they have not been able to maintain those aircraft because they're not able to get spare parts. In some dire situations, they've flown to Iran, one of the most sanctioned countries in the world, to get maintenance on their European and American-built aircraft. So by some miracle, we've had more accidents in the US than we have in Russia in aviation in the past few years or in the past year. But, you know, theoretically, aviation in Russia should be incredibly unsafe right now because we have these aircraft that are not able to be maintained. They're being flown just as much as pre-pandemic. So another benefit, of course, of Russia trying to normalize its relations with the US, be able to resume flights, is that they're hoping to be able to get the spare parts they need for their Boeing aircraft. They're hoping to be able to place new orders with Boeing, which is also something we can now see happening because the world is a crazy place. And with Trump's White House, I'm sure they would love to export billions of dollars worth of aircraft to Russia as well. So it would be a huge win for Russia's aviation industry. It wouldn't even basically minimally impact US aviation because the other part of this is, of course, that US airlines, if relationships or aviation agreements are normalized, would be able to use Russian airspace again, theoretically. So they, for example, United hasn't been flying to Asia from the US East Coast, which they did pre-war and pre-pandemic, because now that they're not able to use Russian airspace, flying to Hong Kong, for example, just is uneconomical and it takes too long. So theoretically, United could resume those flights. And of course, who wins the most then? Again, Russia, because Russia has the highest overflight fees in the world. In before 2022, when these sanctions were put in place, Russia made 1.7 billion dollars in overflight fees in a single year from airlines. So this is a huge industry.
Remember how they were weaponizing their overflight way before the likes of the invasion into Ukraine. Yeah. Do you remember Norwegian Air struggling to fly long haul properly in the early days because they were not given Russian overflight access for reasons that were very unclear to them? They didn't get the Siberian corridor access. It threatened their entire plans to fly east. This is back when Norwegian had the long haul subsidiary, the long haul international airline that were based out of Gatwick, for example, and they wanted to fly to the likes of Thailand and all these different places, and they were very unclear as to their potential progress that the airline could make because of the way Russia was weaponizing airspace.
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting is that as I was researching this, I came across an article from 2023, and I remember reading this at the time that airlines actually found, this was specifically a statement from Air France KLM, flying aircraft like a 787 and A350, these fuel efficient aircraft, it's actually cheaper for them now to take the detour south of Russia, fly for 2 to 3 more hours to reach each East Asia than it was to fly over Russia and pay those crazy overflight fees. So although this is terrible news for the environment, terrible news for people who have to fly for longer, airlines are still coming out ahead compared to using that, quote, shortcut through Russian airspace.
Yeah. That's really interesting. And I just wanted you to elaborate, if you can, on what the situation was. Let's remind the listeners, how were Russia able to steal aircraft? For anyone that we discussed this at the time. And of course, they were doing this way before we even launched the podcast, because the war in Ukraine started in early 2022. But yeah, maybe you can just explain what you meant by that.
Sure. So most airlines around the world don't own all of their aircraft. They lease them from companies that buy them. And then, you know, they go to an airline for a number of years, then they come back to the lessor, and then they go to another airline. So Aeroflot and certain smaller Russian airlines like S7, which was a Oneworld member, of course, leased aircraft from the West because relations were relatively stable back then. But when shit started to hit the fan, so to speak, and the sanctions started coming down, lessors started demanding their aircraft back because they were actually legally not allowed to lease aircraft to Russian companies anymore. As a response, did Russia return those aircraft? State-owned airline Aeroflot? No. They said, what are you going to do? We're going to keep them and you can't do anything about them. So they changed their registrations.
Well, it's funny, on that exact thing about they said, what are you going to do? I spoke to lessors and said, how actually did that, you know, what did that actually look like in the real world? They said to me, oh, very simple. They didn't pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And that was it. They didn't pick up the phone. Never mind reply to an email. They did not pick up the phone. Therefore, they had to lose right off these million-dollar aircraft.
It's such a vulnerable industry when you think about it. That you're, it's basically you're just trusting that the government of that country will maintain its civil duties and act logically. But in this case, that
and lawfully.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So hundreds of aircraft ended up being possessed by Aeroflot. They changed the registrations of those aircraft as if somehow that would magically solve this problem. But luckily, I mean, this is a very minimal number. If you travel around Europe and certain other airports in the world, you will see random Aeroflot A320s or A321s or that kind of thing parked there. And they've been parked there for years because those aircraft were operating services to, for example, Munich. I know there's an Aeroflot A320 standing parked there. And the lessors managed to keep it in Germany as these laws were going into effect. So the aircraft wasn't given clearance to return to Russia. That's a very minimal number of aircraft. But yeah, if you see an Aeroflot plane in Thailand, for example, I was in Phuket and there were three Aeroflot 777s lined up next to each other. I was like, am I in Moscow or am I in Thailand? Those aircraft are all stolen. They're not actually owned by Russia. And what happened, you know, perhaps they were leased from an American company. So how does that company feel if suddenly the U.S. is normalizing relations with Russia,
right,
and those stolen aircraft are now flying into the U.S.? What happens then?
You're right. That's such an interesting... I mean, there are so many angles to this, and that is why it is, you know, we're not even addressing the part, the fundamental, you know, the core part of all of this conversation, which is that how is it that potentially the U.S. is going to drop sanctions on a situation that has not even slightly resolved or moved towards a resolution, let alone, you know, Russia actually saying that they're going to wind down their operation in invading another country. But from an aviation point of view, as you said, there are so many different stakeholders, and the those that are sanctioning, such as the U.S. and the U.K. and the European Union and others, have had to try to stay ahead with, as I said, the evolution, the ever changing ways around these sanctions, which there are tons, by the way, and it is by no means as clear cut as we have described, in that, you know, oh, and so Russia's been boxed in and they're suffering. They're not. And even financially, economically speaking, in terms of the performance of their airlines, from what we've learned, they're doing all right. And it's how, you know, but that baffled the aviation sector that thought that the airlines there would be grounded within weeks of the sanctions.
Yeah, I remember us thinking, oh, all their planes are going to fall apart. There's not going to be any industry because we don't have West, you know, MasterCard and Visa, for example, pulled out of Russia. So how are people going to book their tickets? It's going to be chaos. Of course, now this is a hugely beneficial situation for the likes of Aeroflot because suddenly the amount of foreign competition is drastically decreased, especially from European carriers who were all flying to Russia before this. Now, of course, you still have some Asian carriers flying there, especially from China. And then you have Aeroflot along with Middle Eastern airlines that also have quite a bit of capacity. From what I hear, the Middle Eastern airlines are the preferred airlines of Russians, which I don't blame them for. But Aeroflot is definitely not struggling close to as much as we thought, which is
sad. And as you say, the worldwide kind of, secondary supply chain that was established in order to get around the sanctions came into fruition super quickly, and you had the flow of spare parts flowing anywhere that they were able to come via. So out of China and through Iran and up and via the Middle East and so many different areas that their aircraft are doing all right. I mean, we haven't had... I remember when that... What aircraft was it that landed in the field? Was that...
Was it a 320? Ural Airways A320, yeah. Airlines Airways.
I remember... That was kind of the first example where people thought like, this is the evidence they were waiting for. This is demonstration that the sanctions are working. But, it wasn't really the full picture.
We haven't seen anything since then. And meanwhile, even in Europe.
And by the way, not that, no one's wishing something to go wrong with Russian air travel, because at the end of the day, we're talking about, this is a higher level than the dispute. I mean, than just the ordinary people, right? And unfortunately for normal people, ordinary people, they get lumped into these either side, political disputes without even checking if they have, thoughts or opinions or whatever that maybe differ from government. And so for that reason, nobody wishes anyone innocent to be caught up in difficulty or in aircraft that are deteriorating, but it was expected that this would force the hand of Russia, that this would cripple their economy, that these sanctions would work. They haven't really worked. And now we have the US. I mean, God knows, as you said, we spoke about the leasing companies. Imagine how the European leaders feel now, hearing that not only is the US getting super cozy and warm to the aggressor, And in fact, being aggressive themselves to the victim. But now single-handedly saying, well, you crack on with your sanctions package, but actually we quite fancy the return of direct flights between Russia and LA, for example, with Aeroflot again.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. And just to finish this discussion, I think when we talk about what was expected, no one's hoping for a big incident, of course, but it was kind of just expected that it would all just grind to a halt because aircraft don't have the spare parts they need. Things are kind of,
like COVID. It would look a bit like the pandemic, right?
And that's why all these Western companies pull out, even fast food chains, credit card processors, because they just hope that people will have enough and, make their frustration heard with the government in such numbers that they can't, deny it. So that was the hope. Obviously, that's not really what's happened, but just a healthy reminder that just like obviously in the US, many people to us are completely sane and care about people's rights, care about other people, care about the state of the world, care about democracy. Just like that, there are people like that in Russia. And I had this crazy moment when I landed in Phuket. I was in an elevator going up to find Oscar, and there was this couple that looked so Swedish, like these Swedish hipsters with their two kids. Turns out they were Russian, and it's just like not the image at all, even though we see Russians all the time in our travels. It was just like not the stereotype or even the type I normally see, and it sounds so ridiculous, but when you're sort of isolated from that world, it's a good reminder that there are all types of good people in every country. It's just a lot of the time the leaders and then some people who are crazy and bring it down for the rest of the people.
You're so right. I've got there's a couple that I know, a young Russian couple, and they are very, very open in how devastated they are, in how they feel that when they're traveling around the world, because they're both avid travelers and always have been, how they feel that they're outcasts, or, you know, there's just been this, you know, they didn't choose, and they say, we didn't sign up for this. We don't want to, they don't support what's happening and whatever. And yet, you know, they're for years now, they said when they're approaching passport control, because they're entering countries that are specifically applying sanctions to try to ultimately punish one guy, but taking it out on everyone else. It's that's a difficult position for them to be in. But unfortunately, that is the world we live in, isn't it? That's how politics works. That's how these sanctions are applied. And in all of this, you've got a country that has been invaded, and people have, you know, people have been killed left, right, and center. Schools have been bombed. Hospitals have been bombed. It's awful.
It is. So now on to some slightly more, I don't know if it's slightly more lighthearted, of course. Inspired by my background here today, if you're watching us in Vision, consumer survey group, which? Question mark.
Do you know which?
No.
With a question
are they
mark?
A British?
How do you not know which?
But maybe they're a British thing, no?
They are British, yeah. And it's they're very much champion of the consumer. They have a funny name, which is which question with a question mark.
Yeah.
And they are often holding companies to account when they are failing the consumer. And they do stand up for the consumer, and for that they are respected, because this is the people's organization rather than, you know, I don't know, they're not bought, for example.
Yeah, exactly. So they did a survey with 8,000 travelers across more than 9,000 flights, asking them to rank airlines they'd flown based on things like punctuality, customer service, seat comfort, food, and value for money. They compiled this list with the 20 or 19 airlines appear on this list. At the top, we have some not very surprising airlines. Singapore Airlines, number one. Etihad and Emirates, number two and three. Then all the way at the bottom, in last place, we have British Airways, ranked as the worst long-haul airline in the UK in this survey. What did you think when you saw this?
I know that many consumers who have had a bad experience with BA are very likely to vocalize that experience with consumer champion organizations such as Which. I don't think BA would have been so surprised that they potentially they were surprised that they were the worst, but there's, you know, when Brits specifically, or anyone that lives in the UK, have had a bad experience, as so many have, unfortunately, with long haul with BA, because of their deteriorating cabins over recent years, the way in which they continue to slash the onboard service, all the instability they've had over recent years with their terrible IT meltdowns that are timed perfectly for bank holiday or the busiest travel day of the year or Christmas or whatever, and all that stuff that BA gets a negative reputation about, you know, there's a lot in the UK that have been affected by that, and we'll vocalize how they feel it's really, really poor. It still surprises me how people are very, when they have one bad experience, very, very firm to say, and so I'm not flying them ever again, you know. Or so somebody said to me recently that, oh, you know, they said, oh, BA delayed our flight 6 hours last time. Oh, it was a nightmare. And she said, never again. And I thought, oh God, you know, it was just kind of one day maybe of operational difficulty as a result of an aircraft going tech or weather, or perhaps Heathrow slot restrictions due to high winds, or, you know, gnats spacing out the arrivals. But that's how people feel in those scenarios.
I think it's such a funny thing when people say never again. If we look back, the most famous incident where everyone was saying never again was with Dr. Dow on United Airlines when he was dragged off the aircraft. How many of those people who said never again do you think have flown United again? It's, you know.
Can I ask, did you say never again?
I don't think I did, because I knew that ultimately I will fly them again in my lifetime.
Yeah. I remember that happening and I was broadcasting, and I was like, this is, you know, this is just horrendous, and it was awful and uncomfortable to watch and everything. And also the realization that, imagine, you know, you book a Singapore Airlines flight and your connection is with United. So you've got two Singapore Airlines boarding passes, and on the second flight with your Singapore Airlines boarding pass and the Singapore flight number on it, there's a doctor being dragged down the aisle, right? Yeah. And I remember at the time, because, you know, social media is so such a polarized place, people say, oh, just stop overreacting. He didn't comply with, you know, federal law enforcement and all this stuff. Just thinking, like, God, the world is a weird place, because isn't there just endless discussion about everything? Well, you know, so many years ago, there were very clear rights and wrongs. And now you open social media and people are questioning whether or not something like the invasion into Ukraine is even happening. Not yeah. helped by the likes of the vice president saying that, oh, you take people on propaganda tours. Firstly, JD Vance, you've never been to Ukraine. Okay, Zelensky asked you that, and that's why you got embarrassed and then threw a tantrum. Secondly, showing what is actually happening in real life is not yeah. propaganda. That's realism. It's some being realistic. Anyway, so I feel that when this Dr. Dow incident happened with United, people were saying, you had people saying, I'm on the extreme, I'm never going to fly them again. Probably, you know, difficult if you rely on US air travel. And then on the other side of the extreme, you had, there's nothing to see here. Let's normalize chaos in the cabin. And then I feel ever since then, somewhat it is normalized because of social media. Did you see the video yesterday on the Plus Ultra aircraft going to Venezuela where somebody's trying to open the door?
No, I didn't. I saw some flight in Argentina where people were walking on the seat back, like on the top of the seats over the aisle, and the flight attendants were, you just see the craziest things. But let's get back to British Airways.
Let's get back to BA, yeah.
I feel like you were hinting at this, but to me, the obvious thing here, when you look at this list and you see that TUI Airways is ranked at 14, so much higher than British Airways. You have United, which is, at least American Airlines, we can all agree, is worse than British Airways. They are ranked above British Airways. So this is a British survey. Obviously, British consumers are very upset with British Airways and the direction it has headed in for a long time. Even though they've made some improvements, there's just a lot of frustration. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this, first of all, this is a place for people to take it out, but also people just everyone is very aware of the negative sides of British Airways these days. Everyone focuses on
that. I think sometimes that's like not very fair. I think it's way too magnified, because as an operation, when things go well, you know, they're a league ahead of some other European carriers when things go well. And we often talk about that.
Yeah, especially service-wise. And then also when things go wrong, we've spoken about this several times, they are probably, along with Virgin Atlantic, the best airline in all of Europe when it comes to paying compensation in a timely manner, not arguing. Then you have the likes of Lufthansa that will find the most ridiculous excuses, fight, 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 all of Lufthansa Group. So British Airways, I think, does get a lot more criticism than they deserve.
I agree.
But it's because people have this image from, you know, the 70s or 80s, whenever
they can't shake it off. When Terminal 5 opened and it all fell apart, and that, you know, the strikes, they really, really, if they do put a foot wrong, everybody notices it. Meanwhile, people are still booking to fly Wizz despite the documented evidence that they will not pay you. They will cancel your flight, then they will not pay you. You know,
100%.
Where were Wizz on this list? Do you have the list?
So this is long haul airlines. That's why Wizz, Ryanair, EasyJet, they're not on this. But I just think it's also, I really want to ask the people who participated in this survey what they were thinking, because we have Qatar Airways at number 10, smack in the middle, below the likes of Delta and Qantas and KLM. You know, sometimes these surveys just don't really reflect reality. And I'm always curious.
Maybe fewer of them fewer of those that were surveyed had flown QR.
Surely this is like of people who have flown those airlines, and so obviously people haven't flown all the airlines on this list. It's just like, right. Oh, you just flew Qatar Airways. How do you rank this and this and that? And then for some reason, when people just have flown Etihad, they're super satisfied for some, which I can't quite understand, but Etihad is number two, which, you know, good for them in this case. Also, just while we're on the topic of British Airways, when do you think was the start of the downfall of British Airways? Because as far as I've understood, you know, I lived in the UK until I was 9, until 2006. My favorite thing as a kid, my favorite aircraft models were the, now I forget the name of them, but those British Airways global tails that were supposed to be art from different countries. Do you remember the name?
I can't remember the exact term, but they were the tails that Margaret Thatcher famously hated, and she covered Utopia. The model.
Right.
She covered the model because she thought it was so
exactly.
ugly.
Exactly. Yes. So it was called, I don't know if it was Project Utopia, but it was their Utopia tails, where they had all these different motifs from different destinations that they flew to. And it was such a unique concept that we've never seen since. We haven't seen it before. Yeah. But we had these, for example, here, if you're watching Envision, I just have to show, there's this, it's not showing up. This beautiful 747 tail. Yes, with a rose on it. And, you know, aircraft, especially a 747, is so beautiful to begin with. So adorning it with this unique pattern, I think is amazing. But from what I understand, a lot of Brits were outraged and felt like British Airways was abandoning the British flag.
You've got to be careful British when identity. You're replacing a flag with anything, you know, ultimately. And they thought that was really ugly. But I don't think that was the turning point by any means. I just think that the decline, I think BA has not been able to shake off its decline ever since Alex Cruz was the CEO. Of course, he's not the CEO anymore. But the fact he came from Spanish low-cost carrier Vueling and then tried to implement all those cost-cutting, low-cost measures onto British Airways. Many of them were implemented and then either taken back or they still exist today or whatever. I do pin that as the downfall. That's not to say that when it was under Willie Walsh's management, it was much, much better. But over recent years, I really do think there's been a consolidated effort from British Airways to try to be better. And I think for short haul, they're fantastic. And we've spoken about this. I think their Terminal 5 hub is great. I think the service that you get is excellent compared with if you were flying short haul with, for example, a low-cost carrier from Luton, God forbid. And so there's, you know, in that scenario, I really think that they are unfairly on the receiving end of all this. At the same time, if people are rating BA genuinely on their long-haul experience and they were on one of those ancient 777-200s, for example, that mostly fly out of Gatwick, of course they probably had a bad experience. I don't blame them for rating them low. And and so, you know, the whole airline has elements that are great and elements that are not great, and that's why I think they are mostly, people remember the not great part. And just one more quick point on this, which is that don't forget, BA have pissed off hundreds of thousands of people with the latest move with the executive club, not only going revenue-based, but ultimately upping the threshold for gold to the likes of, you now have to spend £25,000 on British Airways flights in order to maintain gold. And that's pissed off a lot of people. I get it. I just spoke with someone who was in transit here for a day and we got onto this subject and he said to me, you know, BA are probably trying to get rid of flyers like me, passengers like me. I said, oh, why? He said, oh, because I barely fly them. He goes, but I'm gold every year with BA. And it's like,
that's the problem.
You know, and that's the problem, isn't it? That's why the lounges are full. He admitted himself. He said, I don't even remember when I last flew BA. He was like, but I am gold, and so is my partner, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking that is why BA have that issue. And remember, as we said, status is not a right. Okay, so somehow, yeah, you know, the only way that we are going to be able to get over this is to up that threshold. But of course, they've pissed off a lot of people in the meantime. Now you've got EasyJet offering people discounted EasyJet Plus memberships if you've been shunned by the flag carrier.
Yeah, I made a little note for next week because something this is making me think that I really want to discuss is how the regions where airlines are look promising and get better and worse changes over time in such an interesting way. And, you know, now that we're, you know, in our late 20s, oh my gosh, we've had so much time to see how the industry has changed even over our life and over the last 10, 15 years from which airlines were investing a lot then to which airlines are investing a lot now. And, you know, I think Europe has been on quite an extreme journey in that sense. So yeah, I would love to discuss that. But now, before we get into Q&A, something I'm forcing Alex to do because of my new love. And guys, if you listen to this, obviously you love podcasts and you like aviation, but if you want to listen to a non-aviation related podcast, you have to listen to I've Had It with Jennifer and Pumps. It is incredible. And they do this thing on every show where they talk about a few things they've had it with, things they're tired of, they want to go away. So Alex and I are going to borrow a little bit of that concept for this portion of today's episode to share a few things when it comes to flying that we've had it with. So what have you had it with, Alex?
also, hold on. We want to hear from the listeners, right? Write into us and tell us what you've had it with, and so that we can kind of begin to build a picture if there's kind of a common ground here, if what is bothering you when it comes to air travel is bothering us or bothering others and so on. And we want to see, this is another way to understand our community of listeners. No, I'm going to actually respectfully let you start this because this is your segment and your idea. Go on.
Okay. I mean, some I've had it can be funny. Some can be more serious.
Go on.
The first thing that came to mind, because I was having a conversation about actually sort of a debate about this a few days ago, was I have had it with airlines hiring people because they're young and attractive. Being young and attractive does not mean you are good at your job. And I met a flight attendant for a Middle Eastern airline, a Thai woman in her mid-30s. She said she's ready to go back to Thailand. I went, oh, do you want to work for Thai Airways then? She said, no, they only hire you if you're below 25. And I was like, oh my gosh, why? Like, there is no reason. If someone is good at their job, if you can tell that someone is friendly, social, can deliver good service, they're, you know, as long as they follow company standards of presentation, their age or appearance shouldn't matter at all. And I think in 2025, we need to be over that.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've had it with security staff who are aggressive with your belongings. Yes. And I say that after just transiting through Paris. And I understand that the vast majority of passengers, the security, at least under the perception of the security staff, they believe that the vast majority that are passing through have never been to an airport. Of course they have, but that's how they're treated, right? And for many of them, it works because a lot of people are unsure when they get to security. You see them stand and stare at the tray, and they're forgetting their very reason for existing on this earth. And you're like, okay, take your laptop out, right? Or sometimes don't. And I also sympathize with the fact that the rules change everywhere and that it can be confusing. So I haven't had it with the long queue. I haven't had it with the person in front of me. I'm not huffing and puffing. I'm not that guy. What I've had it with is when you know what you're doing, and you know, for example, at this airport that I'm at right now, at this security, I'm going to take my laptop out and put it on this side. I'm going to make sure it doesn't touch my liquids, which are in the clear plastic bag there. And then I'm going to fold my jacket so that it's there. So it's here, here, and here. I don't then want the security person to aggressively, pointlessly pick up something, put it down, you know, and I always watch, oh, perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps they were too close and he's rearranging it in order. Nope. It's just like it's a habit. Also, this thing of where, and I've spoken about it before, where they take it prematurely. So, oh, you must be done with that. And I'm like, no, 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 no. I'm not done with it. Thank you. I'm organizing my bag. You know, or you know, don't leave. And I've always said this before. Don't leave your jewelry or your watches loose. You can put it in your bag. They don't need to be out. Therefore, it reduces the likelihood of theft, which happens all the time. So I've had it with the security staff that aggressively take control of your belongings in that moment, rather than giving you the space to quickly and as efficiently as you can organize your things and then push it through. Because as I said, what happened to me in Nice, when I had taken the laptop, the initial attendant had said to me, leave the laptop in the zip case. I'm like, okay. Then the next one had decided that she wanted it out. That should have been a conversation for me. Instead, she tipped it upside down and the laptop came flying out and it fell just into the tray rather than on the floor. Now, if it had fallen onto the floor, who's paying for it?
Yeah.
Because she should have said to me, oh, actually, I've changed my mind. We, you know, we want it out. But they just feel, they feel that everyone's an idiot. And I'm like, you know, some people are, but most people are not. And therefore, in no other area of society would your belongings be mishandled. So yeah, I've had it with that.
That is such a good one. And that also makes me think of, why is it that every time you're in security, the people working there act like you are the idiot? Because, for example, I have my watch. Some airports are like, take off the watch. Some airports say, keep it on. But the way every airport says it is like, for example, if I go, can I keep my watch on? Of course you can't keep your watch on, you know?
I know.
Or it's like,
I know.
Can I keep
it's
my
so,
watch
it's
on?
It's just so aggressive.
Can I keep my watch on? Yes. Why would you take it off? Like every single agent. And it's like, I know you've never left your hometown, but I, as opposed to you, go to new airports all the time where the rules are different. That's why I'm asking. You know?
And at least you're not, goodness, because you made me laugh. Sorry. Yeah. at least you're not being the aggressive, entitled, arrogant guy who's assuming, you know, you're doing the right thing by asking. Otherwise, you're going to slow everyone down if you walk through and you shouldn't have, or you know.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. You unleashed a kraken.
Go on.
Okay. I have had it with, I had a few good ones. Do you have a good one now? Because I want to do just one more, but I need to pick the juiciest.
All right. So what I also have had it with, right? I've had it with the rhetoric that often gets built from European airlines when they're expecting million or billion dollar profits, but are looking at ways to justify why they are not reinvesting and why their passenger experience is still so shit and why everything is still mediocre and rubbish. So let's blame the fact that they can't fly over Russia. I've had it with that, because there are many airlines that do this. And actually, that's feeding directly into the play of the White House right now. So you want to ask these airlines, are you asking for them to drop the sanctions? Or are you just looking for an excuse as to why you are so mediocre, despite the fact that almost every airline last year and this year are expected and projected to announce record-breaking profits? Just because some are good at reinvesting and others sit on those profits and pay shareholders, you know, doesn't mean you then justify, you start to brainwash the population into, oh, we're terrible because we can't fly over Russia on four routes only. Yeah. Oh, but ignore the fact that we primarily fly over the transatlantic and we actually very rarely need Russian airspace. That's not a sensible way to approach what is going on in the world. And I think it's a BS excuse that I've had it with.
Yeah, I've had it so hard with that. We can all see your financials. Whatever you tell us in your little announcements or press conferences, we can see that you're making hundreds of millions. It's you know, it's so crazy.
These are airlines that are dominant on the world's only billion-dollar air route, which is between London and New York, and they're trying to deflect and say that, oh, you know, because we can't fly over Russia. You were barely flying over Russia in the first place. So sit down and reinvest. Go on.
Good, good. Okay, my final I've had it for today is I have had it with people, especially in premium cabins, playing music or watching videos without headphones. What is
horrible.
Your problem? You're in a public place.
I swear it's getting worse.
If you can afford a plane ticket, you can afford a pair of at least wired earbuds for $10. Yeah. So plop those things in and respect the people around you.
I agree. I do think it's getting worse. I don't know. Decorum and, you know, standards just vanishing into thin air. It's like, can we bring back a time where we cared for each other and where we didn't want to pollute the passenger next to us with noise coming out of your... Yeah, it's good. Actually, on my recent QR flight, there's now a video that they play at the start of the flight reminding passengers to... It's a new video reminding passengers that it starts off with something playing out loud and then it like shows the headphones going in and it's like all quiet and tranquil. Nice. And it says like, keep it peaceful for everyone else. You know, plug in your headphones and like utilize headphones.
It's like when you go to the movies, then that's what airlines should do. You know, you probably haven't seen it, but in the US, Nicole Kidman is iconic for the ad that plays at AMC theaters before a movie. should just start doing that for airlines, especially, you know, Etihad, where she was their face. There is a song that so perfectly encapsulates this from the musical Chicago called Class that everyone should go listen to after this. It basically goes, whatever happened to class? Nobody's got no class. And she continues to list ways.
Maybe that's
that
the title of
class.
This week's episode.
Yeah, I mean, that's the subtitle at least. With that, let's get into Q&A.
Okay, I've got a message here that I wanted to read out from Kat. She says, hi, Alex, I'm Kat, a listener from the Philippines. I'm a recent fan of the podcast after watching the QR First Class video that Dan uploaded. And I've now listened to every episode of On Air. I don't have a question just yet, but I wanted to share with you that you guys have become like my work besties because I listen to the episodes in the morning when I'm in the office. Thank you so much for all the great stories, and it's been lovely waiting for the episode weekly along with everyone. This was a really nice message. Thank you, Kat. We are pleased to be your work besties. I don't know what you do, but we hope that we can perform as well as you do here at your workplace. With us in your ear, you are only geared for success. I'm going to go quickly to a question as well from Raphael. He says, guys, what do you think of the fact that Korean Air is set to grant a record high performance bonus equivalent to 500% of the monthly base salary? The decision comes as the airline achieves its highest ever performance last year, and some speculate that this bonus is really just an effort to boost employee morale amid the ongoing merger with Asiana. What do we think? My initial thoughts were, I think we're going to see more of this because every meeting that I'm in at the moment seems to highlight that airlines are once again in for a record-breaking year when it comes to their financials. And so we hope that we see some profit sharing with that and some well-deserved bonuses. But I do think that the merger might be a little at play there in, as you said, Raphael, making sure that the morale remains high.
Yeah, I 100% agree with what you said, Alex. I have a question here from Michael. He says, love your podcast, looking forward to it every week. Actually, this is more of a, I guess, story for us than a question. I also don't have the second half, but I hope this captures it. I'm a wheelchair user and flying is just brutal. But there is one thing I've been thinking about, and that is checking in. I've flown from the best airport in the world, Landvetter Airport, Gothenburg, to Newark and to Heathrow this year. And on every check-in, there need to be at least four people asking me the same questions and calling their manager. Last time from Heathrow, I didn't bring my electric wheelchair because it takes hours to check in. I can't be the only one in a wheelchair flying. When I book my ticket, I have to fill in what kind of accessibility help I need, something that at least four people at the check-in counter then ask. It took me close to an hour to check in at Heathrow last time. I'm so sorry to hear about this, Michael. And this,
yeah, that's terrible.
This is something that I get a lot of questions about accessibility on my videos. And I've never, until I kind of helped my great aunt and uncle take a vacation to the Maldives 2 months ago. And that was the first time I have ever had to order accessibility for anyone. So they were flying Qatar one way, Emirates the other. So I had to contact both airlines. And I was like, so then they asked these questions, can they walk to their seat? Or do they need help getting from the jetway to their seat, for example? Can they walk in stairs? All these very specific questions that I, of course, are very logical to ask, but I had no idea or had never thought about that. Of course, they're asking these things. another time last summer, we were flying, my grandma was flying to Scotland. She needs a wheelchair at the airport. And then also in Gothenburg, we ended up having to wait probably 30 minutes for someone to come and pick her up, who was going to escort her on the wheelchair through security and everything, which is, of course, a huge bummer. In the US, you can actually get a pass to clear security to drop someone off at the gate, whether it's a loved one or that kind of thing, which I think
does
is
that
kind
apply
of
for
a,
international? Does that apply for international flights as well? I think it's
good question
domestic.
Because, I mean, in the US, they're not separated. So domestic and international can leave from gates next to each other. Actually, no, I think you can, because I remember my dad did that for us sometimes as a kid, as kids. So yeah, it's just, I think that would be like, first of all, a decent solution to part of it, offering something like this in Europe. But then, yeah, it's so unfortunate to hear that they're, you know, first of all, these questions that they ask beforehand don't actually lead to any time savings or that kind of thing at the airport.
No.
And it's something that should be so simple. You know, I'm in a wheelchair. I need to get from A to B. There should be a routine.
Well, there
this.
Is, there is, you know, there are protocols in place, but unfortunately, we hear time and time again about how clear procedure isn't followed and people are not across the documents. So then they start asking the individual and they don't realize that that's making it really uncomfortable rather than the individual being sharp on it, the agent, and then not having to just pointlessly ask things that, for example, are on paper in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have any more questions? I have a few more, I want to take them next week.
I want to get this one. This is from no name. The Airport Aviation is the username. Hi, Alex. I love the podcast with you and your guest host, Dan, he says. I have a question which you can answer. What do we guys think? He says, what do you guys think on Etihad announcing that they will fly the A380 to Toronto from June, therefore pulling it from JFK? Any thoughts? I thought that this was clever because Canada is super protectionist when it comes to air travel. It's very limiting in terms of the number of frequencies that Gulf carriers, specifically, they're very Gulf skeptic. The Gulf carriers can operate. And in order to increase capacity and maximize the flow of how many people they're getting in and out of Canada, a huge market. I mean, if I was in charge of an airline, I would look at A380s to Canada. So I think it makes sense for them to pull it, even though it means pulling it from New York, which is, you know, a flagship route. I think the idea is fundamentally about capacity, and that is a sensible way to increase capacity.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Of course, if Etihad wanted to, the US has no restrictions on flights. It's JFK that is slot restricted. But if they wanted to, they could launch flights, more flights to the New York area than they could possibly know how to fill if there were the slots. So, you know, the E380 is a great marketing tool for airlines. So flying that to New York is, of course, a great thing for Etihad from that perspective. But I think Toronto will make sense. What we will be tracking over the coming months here on the podcast is how travel demand develops, particularly from Europe outbound to the United States. We've already seen Canada see a decrease in demand for travel to the United States. And I suspect, especially after this summer is over, when people, you know, people had already booked their trips for that months ago, perhaps going into next winter, next summer, I think we'll see some big changes in transatlantic demand.
I agree fully. Cool. So, well, look, with that, let us wrap. We'll welcome, as always, your questions, mostly via Instagram is the easiest way. And both of our Instagrams are in the description if you are watching this on YouTube, and probably also in the description wherever else you're listening to this, including Spotify, Apple, and beyond. Thank you very much for joining us, as always. And
we will
speak on behalf of Dan.
Hey, well, this is my part. We will see you next week on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
At Tanger Outlets, find all the best brands, all on sale, every day. Step into the season's newest arrivals and save big on the styles you love. Shop Under Armour, Michael Kors, Crocs, and more. With up to 70% off, plus an extra 25% off for a limited time. Hurry in for amazing deals from the brands you love. Only at Tanger Outlets.